This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Yeah, that's me, Sue. I'm so brave, right?
Oh, that's you.
That's me. Full of bravery. But we've had a great show. We had a great conversation with Scott Jennings. You can always use the Rewind app to go back to that. Johanna Berkman in the first hour was really good on some of this stuff at Harvard. Dwayne Patterson's coming up here in a second. But let me play Carolyn from the briefing today. And I'm going to just be honest, because I'm always honest with the audience. There are aspects of this legislation that I'm not comfortable with. I'm not comfortable with the fact that DOGE seemingly hasn't done enough work. But there's realities of politics, not only the math, we covered this a little bit in the last hour, but just the reality of what they can do with reconciliation. I think Dwayne's going to be really good at explaining that here in a moment. But here's Carolyn.
The blatantly wrong claim that the One Big Beautiful Bill increases the deficit is based on the Congressional Budget Office and other scorekeepers who use shoddy assumptions and have historically been terrible at forecasting across Democrat and Republican administrations alike. For example, just before Congress enacted the original Trump tax cuts at the end of 2017, the same CBO projected that growth would average a mere 1.9% over the next 10 years. However, by 2019, actual growth had surged to 3.4% once the Trump tax cuts went into effect, exceeding the CBO forecast by nearly 2 full percentage points. The CBO's latest forecast makes the same anemic growth assumptions as they did in 2017, missing the impact of the One Big Beautiful Bill. The CBO assumes long-term GDP growth of an anemic 1.8%, and that is absurd. The American economy is going to boom like never before after the One Big Beautiful Bill is passed. The largest middle-class tax cut in history, massive deregulation, and the most aggressive domestic energy exploration ever will fuel small businesses, further boost private investment, increase workers' wages, and supercharge economic growth.
Okay, well, I want to believe a lot of that. I really do. And, you know, it was interesting. I think, Sue, both you and I took notice when Johanna Berkman was on talking about Harvard a couple of hours ago, and she pointed toward, you know, the tax on the endowments, which was actually put in place during the previous Trump administration, which now in this bill is going to be increased even more. That's fascinating to me.
It is.
Dwayne Patterson is back with us. He writes at hotair.com. He hosts the Dwayne's World podcast. How are you, Dwayne, this afternoon? Welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
We have not spoken specifically about the big, beautiful bill. Elon Musk. Let me play Elon here, because this is kind of making some news. As you know, he's got the CBS interview this weekend.
You know, I was like disappointed to see the massive spending bill, frankly, which increases the budget deficit, not just decrease it, and undermines the work that the DOGE team is doing.
I actually thought that when this big, beautiful bill came along. I mean, like, everything he's done on DOGE gets wiped out in the first year.
I think a bill can be big, or it could be beautiful. But I don't know if it could be both.
So that doesn't exactly match up with what we heard from the press room in Carolyn. So I'm very curious about your perspective here because, you know, there's certainly things to like, but I do think there's some questions about the level of spending. Even Josh Hawley and Senator Johnson are trying to raise those right now. Where are you on this?
Well, I think where this thing comes down to is the Senate is going to take some of the things that the House had to throw in there to get the Northeast Republicans on board. And, you know, like the SALT deductions and all that stuff, the Senate will probably claw a lot of that back. They will probably have a bill that's got a lot more spending cuts in it when all is said and done. And then it's going to go to conference committee. And it's going to go to conference committee for a week or two. And honestly, what's going to happen is you've got people like Mike Lawler, who I respect immensely from New York. He's a very valuable member of the Republican conference. Northeast liberal who has to fight for the SALT deduction because his constituents demand it, being in a blue state like New York. He's now done his job. He went from a $10,000 deduction in the Big Beautiful Bill to $40,000 deduction. And he can go back to his constituents and say, I fought, I did everything I said I was going to do. It goes to the Senate. They're going to be like, no, we're not going to do that. They may claw it down to 12 or somewhere like that. It's going to go to conference, and in conference, it's like haggling over a Tijuana Serapi. It's going to end up being 20, you know, it'll be somewhere in the middle, and
right.
Everybody's going to be miserable about it. But that's going to be where it's at, and it will pass both houses. That's what's going to happen. As far as Elon Musk's complaint, and I respect him a lot, and I understand his complaint. From my understanding, and Caroline didn't address it specifically in the press conference today. I wish she would have. But Stephen Miller, Deputy Chief of Staff, who I don't know if you've had Stephen Miller on your show.
I never have, but he's certainly a wordsmith, and you don't want to battle with Stephen Miller, do you?
Not unless you really know what you're talking about,
right?
Because he will carve you up into little bitty meatballs.
Yes, he will. Right, yes.
Well, Miller said, here's the problem with the DOGE cuts and trying to cram it into the Big Beautiful Bill. It doesn't qualify under the Byrd rule in the Senate to be able to be counted in reconciliation, meaning it's...
Exactly.
The cuts that they're trying to do in DOGE are more systemic long-term, and it would have to be its own legislation, and it would be subject to a filibuster rule. Now, Monday, from my understanding, the White House is going to drop a rescission package of a lot of these DOGE cuts, and it's going to go through the House, and my guess is a lot of people in the House will go along with it. It may pass in the House. And then it's got to go to the Senate, and it's going to be glorious to watch all these Democrats say, no, we can't cut this, no, we can't cut that. And it's going to be a campaign issue, and I think it will actually work to the president's advantage long term. But those cuts have to go through normal order, not a reconciliation bill. So everything that you think you want in this bill, you're not going to get because it doesn't qualify. There are very arcane rules as to what can and cannot go into a reconciliation bill.
Yeah, and we talked about that a little bit in the last hour, and this is where it gets tough for people because you see a lot of the chirping already on Twitter and elsewhere about, okay, now you got to do your jobs. Well, the job is very, very nuanced here, and the numbers are very narrow. And I've made this case, and you and I have talked about this before. You talk about Lawler, you can talk about people out in California. Lawler's in a district that Kamala Harris won, right? He's a Republican in a district. So it's a different makeup than Jason Smith, the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, who was with us earlier this week talking about all this. But in the end, I guess my concern is manyfold, but I've said this for literally decades, so it's nothing new. There's no way to really get to the deep-seated issues with government spending without touching the entitlements. And there is no effort whatsoever. I know they're doing some changes with Medicaid that I would approve of with work requirements. But look, if we don't get to eventually, we keep kicking the can on Medicare and Social Security, we're not going to have any of this solved. So whatever you do with DOGE, whatever scalpel you want to take, it's not going to matter because it still grows on the healthcare front and the retirement front.
Absolutely right. And Trump has already decided, not on my watch, are we going to touch the third rail We can clean up a ton on in fraud and abuse and all that stuff, and that's great. We should do that as a matter of course anyway. But we are going to, as a culture, as a society, have to have a hard conversation about when Social Security was created and the retirement age was 65 and the average lifespan then was 67, so everybody was on it for maybe a year or two. Okay, that was sustainable. But now if the average lifespan is 73, 75, and you've got people that are living 95, 98, 100 years old and retiring at 65, if you're not having, families of 7, 8, 10, 12 kids to keep that going, the math is not going to work. You've got to do something different. You've got to raise the retirement age. It's not popular, but you got to do it.
So here's what's frustrating to me, and you've been doing this for a long time, and I've been doing this for a long time, and, you know, people can believe what they want to believe, but I genuinely care about the issues that we talk about. And when it comes to government spending, it's what made me a conservative. I came up in the 80s. The first president that I voted for was Ronald Reagan. So I'll tell you a little story here, and you'll be easily able to guess who I'm talking about here probably in a matter of seconds. But round about 1997, actually that very year, I moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I would not describe myself at all as a policy wonk, but I'm certainly interested in issues. I get to know a guy who at that time is a freshman in 1998 and in the early parts of the 2000s was working his ass off as a disciple of Jack Kemp and as someone who deeply cared about changing the system and reducing government spending. He ended up being the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. He ended up running for vice president. He ended up being someone who you can't even mention the name of right now when we're having discussions. Paul Ryan. Exactly. So Paul Ryan, he's a rhino in MAGA world. He's a guy that you don't even want to admit to. I can barely admit to my listeners that I'm friends with the guy. But there's a guy who in 2004 in particular really, really tried to get Social Security reform across the finish line, and it failed. And you say, what you said is true. We've kicked the can every 4 years.
Right.
What would make any, I've been doing this now, I've been talking about entitlement reform for literally 30 years. Nothing has ever happened. So I have no faith that anything will ever happen. And then where does that leave my daughter, who's 10 years old, and the rest of the country?
Well, you need clearly like 6-7 more daughters.
Well, but your point about that is very good because look, we're not having as many kids and people are retiring. And then we have young men who don't want to work. So this all combined really creates a difficult situation. I'm disappointed that Trump doesn't want to touch this because I think at a certain point, someone's going to have to be brave enough to say, and look, Paul Ryan made the mistake of being brave enough. And then, Granny was being thrown off the cliff. So who's going to have the intestinal fortitude to actually do something about this and have the numbers to do something about it? I can answer that question. It's rhetorical. Nobody.
Well, and that's the thing, is the only way you're going to do anything like that, forget the margins in the House. You need a little bit more margin in the House to be able to tolerate some of the peel off from people that are going to be queasy and not want to go with it. So you need a bigger margin in the House. But something like that, you need, 65 Republicans virtually to do that? Because of the 65, you're going to lose at least five that will never go for it because they're from, northeast states or bluish-tinging states that have a moderate Republican. And so, but you still need to get to 60. You've got to clear the threshold. Unless you can find somebody to make the argument that it is such a time constraint and a issue that we've got to fix right now or else that we're willing to kill the filibuster on it and go to the mattress for it, and we're willing to put this in and lose power in the next election as a punishment for it.
No one will do that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You know that. No one will do that. No one will do that. So that concerns me about the future. I'm all for going through a process that starts, you know, picking off all this ridiculous spending and reduced spending. There's a really interesting piece, and I'm going to try to get him on the air, by a guy by the name of Joe Nocera. Do you know Joe at all?
I've heard of him, yeah.
He wrote at the Free Press, and the article is entitled Why Doge Failed. And he writes about Charlie Peters, who was the editor of the Washington Monthly, and he describes him as a connoisseur of bureaucracy. He was John F. Kennedy's West Virginia campaign manager, and he arrived in Washington to join the Peace Corps, which was very new. And he was handed this position, the first ever position in the federal government, and it was called Director of Evaluation. His job was literally to travel to locations that the Peace Corps was in, spend enough time there to get a read on what they were doing and what was working and what wasn't working. You know, this was Doge before Doge, and then report back to a guy that everyone knows, Sergeant Shriver. So his reports didn't endear him to the officials, but it gave him the insight into how bureaucracies work, or precisely really how they don't work. So this guy, Joe Nocera, who writes this piece, says, look, I've thought about this a lot recently because of Doge and the Big Beautiful Bill. And he says, if only Elon Musk had read the 1980 book, which is called How Washington Really Works, which it's described in that book that the focus of government agencies was to ensure that their budgets never shrank. So if a new department is created because of an emergency, hey, I can name one here, the Department of Homeland Security, it would become an entrenched part of the permanent government long after the emergency was forgotten, and the work bureaucrats, he wrote, could be best described as make-believe. It's a really good piece. I'm going to try to get Joe on, but there's so many lessons in that because we've done that. I mean, Homeland Security is a great example of that. Has that made us safer at the airports? I think there's some questions about that. We create these big bureaucracies, and Dwayne, you know this, Republicans and Democrats do this together because they feel like they have to and they can campaign on these things. But a lot of these things are failures. That's why the Department of Education was created. We should get rid of it, right? Shouldn't be controversial. But it was along these lines.
Yeah, I totally agree with the concept here. I'm not willing to accept the premise that Doge has failed. Doge is still there.
Well, I agree with that. You're right.
I mean, just because Elon Musk, he could only have served for 5 months anyway, according to the, without getting Senate approval or without having an appointment by the president, a special advisor from the outside can only be there for like 5-6 months or whatever the time frame was by statute. So he can only be there for a period of time.
No, and I understand that. You know, part of the point of what Joe Nocera was writing, that you can't fix government unless you know how it really works. And let's face it, President Trump didn't know how government worked in the first term. He's learned a lot since then.
Correct.
And I agree with you that Doge hasn't failed because you can't put the marker at right now. But you know as well as I do that there are a lot of people that are making threats to the Republicans saying, look, you better do your job right now. We're going to primary you. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. You're a rhino. All of this stuff. Not understanding how complicated this process really is.
Right. And again, to be able to close down the Department of Education, you can shutter it, you can try to block grant it, you can do whatever else, and you've got to run the gauntlet of some judge in you know, Wyoming somewhere or Washington State saying, you know, I don't like this, and so you not only have to give back all the money you're cutting, you have to hire back everybody you laid off as part of the DOGE overhaul, and I hereby make this a nationwide injunction. Until the Supreme Court finally gets the courts in their lane, you're not going to be able to have, even if you give Trump the credit that he's trying to do to clean up government, every single step along the way, a court is telling him, no, you can't do that, yeah, and suing him.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, one court says one thing, one court says the other thing. That's another obstacle right now.
Right.
I don't know what the answers are. I'm going to be joined here in a couple of minutes by one of our newer members of Congress, Bob Onder, and he's a fiscal conservative. There's no doubt about that. But he also understands the complications of the policy. But look, this is going to be very fascinating. For example, when you and I have a conversation in the fall of next year, because that's before the midterms, how much was really achieved? Because let's just face it, if you can't point to significant markers, the Democrats are going to use that against you. And they're going to try to win the House and the Senate, and then the math even gets more complicated.
Okay, well, let me counter. The counter would be if we get to fall next year and we have robust growth because of all the foreign investment that Donald Trump hauled in, some of that $5 trillion is already being spent, and we've got factories being built, we've got construction jobs going on, we've got people with higher paying jobs all over the country. Energy is flowing everywhere. The cost of living is not quite as high because the transportation costs aren't as high on all the goods moving around. And all of a sudden, economically, the country is just chugging along as far as its GDP. Well, you know, that's actually a pretty good case to make. And if spending is at least kind of in check and we're not at $2+ trillion of deficit.
That's a W. That's a big win. There's no doubt. Right. I love your optimism. I love your optimism. I just hope that that's where we're heading. And, you know, this trade stuff is very difficult to understand. It's difficult to know exactly what's going on because we've already seen some of the negotiation, the art of the deal. And I'm going to have to put my trust in the process. But the other part of this is the media is not going to tell you if all those things happened anyway. Let's be honest.
Mark, you and me are now the media. Is Jake Tapper really still the media?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I know.
After this whole book tour, all he's been doing is saying, not my fault they lied to me, they lied to me. What does that make him as a journalist?
A liar. Complicit.
If you're a Cub reporter in a city beat somewhere and you go to your editor and say, well, it's not my fault they lied to me. What are they going to do to you? They're going to fire you,
yeah,
right?
He's an embarrassment. Look, he is such an embarrassment. I have a little audio that I'm going to share in my audio cut of the day segment. Dwayne, thank you so much.
We are the media now.
All right, I like that a lot, the new media. I'm the old media and the new media combined. How about that?
Works for me.
All right, Dwayne Patterson, catch you later. Thank you. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.